Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow.
Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
You're going to teabag fight.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Welcome, everybody. It's The Session. We are back. If you're listening live, this is our second show this week because, as you guys know, January is coming to a close here in a couple days. So we wanted to talk to as many brewers as we could for the month of January. And right now, today on the show, I'm joined by Jess Jackson, owner and brewer from Five Sons Brewing over in Martinez, our old stomping grounds. Jess, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, man, for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I'm excited. So we used to have a studio in Martinez right off of Main Street there.
Right next to the Pack Mail, right?
Right next to Pack Mail. Yeah.
I remember going in there whenever you guys were, I'm not sure how far into it you guys were, but I remember during like some like the zombie crawl and the Santa crawls and stuff, wandering in there and you guys were in there. I remember the gentleman with the very impressive beard.
That's Warren.
He stands out the most, but that's mostly because he is the most, he's easy to pick out at a distance.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, we're basically a show of like really tall people and then really endowed beardedly people. And that's it. And I think the beard does sort of trump height when it comes to like recalling people. You know, if you have fancy facial hair, that's going to be the first thing you remember. And then a room full of tall people.
Well, I feel like it kind of depends. I mean, because like unless you're like really like noteworthy tall, because I'm over 6 foot myself. So, I mean, like, same. But not well over. So, I mean, like if you're like 6'9", 6'8", that's a little bit more noteworthy than a halfway decent beard.
Sure.
But it just kind of goes with, you know, how far into the extreme are you?
So. Yeah, exactly. No, I feel you, man. Yeah, that's cool. I sort of miss Martinez, but there wasn't a whole lot going on when we were there. So it sort of made sense for us just to leave for a number of reasons, but you chose downtown, or where are you actually in Martinez? I'm assuming you're downtown.
So technically our address is 701 Escobar, Unit C, but okay. Our storefront is actually on Estadio. So we are actually equidistant. We're smack dab between the train station and from Starbucks on Main Street. So we're right there in the middle.
Okay, on the corner, that like a brick building on the corner that was like really.
So we're actually right next door to that. So there's another brewery that's located there, and then we're actually right next door, nestled in behind them. So.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. How long have you been in Martinez?
So we opened our doors for business on December, I believe, 15th of 2017. Mm-hmm. We started demolition November of 2016. So me and the other four owners, we got a full year of demolition and construction, which was a nightmare. and so we got that done. And then we were able to open our doors just shy of the new year. And then we've been kind of running strong ever since. Well, you know, the last year been a little... It's been a little hectic, but yeah. So December 2017 was when we officially opened for business.
2017, not too bad. Yeah, you know, you were talking about how much of a nightmare construction was and all that. And I was looking through your site today, and I like that you documented it all. You wrote blogs on every step of the way.
No, yeah, a lot of that was Dennis. So whenever we started this thing, it was basically. So there was five of us, which is kind of it's partially where the name Five Sons comes from, because it's five FIVE for those who are listening or who weren't familiar. So it's FIVE and then sons like Sons in the Sky, which is kind of a play on words because we're all sons of Martinez. So it's five friends. We all kind of grew up together. Four of us played Little League baseball together. Three of us went to elementary school. We all graduated the same year. Didn't go to college per se together, went to different schools, but mm-hmm. In college was whenever we kind of like got into home brewing, and then we started this place. So all five of us had our regular Monday through Friday 8-to-5 jobs, and then we did all the construction and such on the weekends. And so it was a bit of a nightmare, just because, you know, we'd work 40 hours a week, and then, you know, Friday after work we'd come in here and, you know, with enough light, and then, you know, try to get some painting done, some power washing done. And then Dennis, luckily it was very early on, he had the really good idea that it would be fun to just kind of start taking pictures. So then he just started documenting everything as we started doing our demo and then obviously our finishing work. And then that kind of culminated with, we actually brought a TV down here and set it up. So on our grand opening, we set a TV up and then had, just like a running slideshow of pictures throughout the whole build-out process. So then that led us into on our first anniversary. We did the same thing with all the different pictures and milestones from our first year being open.
I like that. That's cool, man. It gives everyone a little update about what your story has been, your trajectory, because it's not easy opening a brewery. And unless you really talk to people who have done it and gotten through it, you sort of assume like, well, this must have all been here. You know, the floors must have been perfect, or the drains, I guess, were here. That's why they chose this building. But if you show people the sort of sweat that you put into the building, I think it maybe cements your place a little bit in the community. I don't know. Is that reaching too much?
Well, it just kind of gives a, I don't know. I mean, like it's a lofty dream. And like, I think that, I don't think there's I don't want to say a guy, but you know, just cause I want to include everybody, but like there's nobody who enjoys beer that doesn't sit in their early 20s and say, one day I want to own a brewery, one day I want to own a bar, one day, and it's always like the lofty drinking goal. So then to actually kind of go out and do it, and kind of like you said, like it's like this building was not outfitted to be a brewery. Everything we did ourselves. So like we had to put the floor drain in, which there's pictures on our website that document that fiasco. And you know, we rebuilt the bathrooms, and you know, we were the ones who kind of came in here and tore out everything that was in here before, and then basically fabricated the building that we needed. So so whenever you come in here and you see like the exposed brick on the walls, all that was done by us. That brick was exposed by us, and all the electrical work going along the ceiling, that electrical work was done by us. Granted, it was under the supervision of a licensed professional.
Yeah, I hope so, man.
Well, just so no one gets scared, you know, coming in here. But it was just one of those things, like we were the ones that basically would spend the whole week watching, you know, Construction for Dummies all week. And then we would come in here on the weekends and absolutely bust our asses, you know, from it as early as we could get in until basically when we ran out of light, because until we got lights ran in here, we were basically at the mercy of sunlight. And
Which is sort of just ironic given your name.
Oh, trust me, irony not lost on us, you know. Yeah. And then being self-centered, you know, and everything revolves around me. So, of course, you know, I'm one of the sons.
Sure.
But no, it's just, I don't know. It's like looking back on it, it's just like it was so much work. And like to say, like, would I do it again? Well, like, well, I'm happy and I love what I do. So, like, of course I would do it again. But in the moment, it was just, it was an epic undertaking. And like, I don't think any of us really understood what we were getting into.
Yeah.
But then again, like, the bond we have with us as friends, it's like we're not just a couple of guys that like knew each other from high school. It's, it kind of just goes deeper than that. I don't want to be cliche and be like they're like brothers, but like they really are. I mean,
yeah. Well, you didn't like DocuSign over an LLC agreement to your investor, and then suddenly your business partners. Like you guys, you know, probably broke some knuckles getting that place into shape.
No, yeah. I mean, luckily, not too much. So, literally, aside from like the occasional scrape or bump. I did take a 12-foot 2x6 to the top of my head, but that was about the worst of the injuries, and that didn't even require a hospital visit. But really, what it was just the fact that like all of us love beer,
yeah,
which I don't understand anybody who doesn't. But all of us love beer; we're passionate about the industry, and it was one of those things that like, you know, we kind of felt that there was like a little bit of something missing from Martinez that we wanted to bring, mm-hmm. and so. So we just took all of our favorite aspects of the industry that whenever we would go to other places, and we tried to bring that here. So some of that is the aesthetic, but most of it is like the interpersonal.
Okay. What do you mean?
So whenever people come in, like there's a local place in Martinez that we used to all go to, and like, and there's something kind of heartwarming about whenever you go into a place and they know your name, just like in Cheers, where everybody knows your name.
Right.
And like remembering people, and like whenever you talk to your customers, and like you get to know them and what's going on in their lives, and we kind of wanted to create that here in Martinez. So it's really nice because you develop your following, and of course you want to bring new people in. You always want to have new people experiencing your product, new people enjoying your beer. But at the same time, those are the ones that are it's the people who come in week after week that kind of keep you afloat. Right. And so we wanted to create a place to where we remember the people who come in. And so when we have our regulars, you know, we know a lot of our regulars by name, and if not by name, definitely by face. And we know what's going on with them. And we can follow up with maybe they made a major life change, you know, marriage or house purchase or something like that. And so like, that's kind of something that we wanted to bring a brewery to Martinez that had that feel to where, like a home away from home. We're going to run away with cliches today.
Hey, I love it, man.
But no, but like, I mean, like it is a cliche thing to say, and it is kind of a joke, but it's also how we feel. Like, sure. You know, I care about people most of the time.
Yeah.
And I'm also very passionate about the industry. And so whenever I get to see people coming in and enjoying something that I had a hand in, it makes every bit of sacrifice and work worth it. So,
I mean, do you think it's more amplified because you're from Martinez? It's your home city.
I mean, yes and no. We definitely had a lot of like hometown support because, you know, it's a bunch of local boys doing something in their hometown.
Yeah.
That's not to say that somebody can't come from somewhere else and do the same thing. I do think that is definitely reflected just that like I've always thought that Martinez had a lot of potential. I always thought that it was relatively underrepresented. I mean, if you go back 5 or 6 years, which I'm sure you're aware of, that like on a Friday night or a Saturday night, there really wasn't a whole lot going on.
Yeah.
There was maybe two or three bars, and everything kind of closed down by around 6, 7 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. I remember leaving the studio and like there's nobody. There's not even car traffic, and it's 6 o'clock. You're like, all right, that's fine.
So we were kind of getting fed up because we're like, you know, like there's nothing to do in Martinez and there's no breweries in Martinez and nobody was taking the initiative. So we said, well, the hell with it. We're going to make one ourselves.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly kind of what we did. And, you know, we had a ton of support from the city, from, you know, just friends and family, and then even people that we didn't know because they were excited about something happening in Martinez. And then now you fast forward. I mean, it's been 4 years since we broke ground and 3 years since we opened, and like, you know, there's more restaurants. So, you know, there's like a cocktail bar. There's a, you know, there's a tattoo and art studio. There's new eateries and stuff going in. There's multiple salons. There's a new wine bar going in. There's an existing wine bar. And so, I mean, like, it's really nice to start to see that like Martinez is kind of becoming a little bit more of a destination because there's tons of history here. There's tons of culture here because like there's just because it used to be a port city. And so like there's so many like blending of different families and cultures and stuff that like it's nice to see that it's getting like the recognition that it kind of deserves.
Nice.
In my
opinion. Yeah.
But of course I'm biased.
Yeah. For sure, man.
I was born here. So of course I'm gonna be a little bit more, you know, pro Martinez.
Right, exactly. Get you on the board. Yeah. I hate my hometown, so I'm gonna open a business in it and then no, of course.
I've always felt bad for those people who hate their hometown. Granted, I mean, like, I don't think Martinez is the, you know, is the number one greatest city ever, but I do feel that for what there is to do and and where you're located here that, you know, that like it just never really got a good rap.
Yeah.
Just underrepresented because like there's so much to do, not just here, but just like kind of locally. And that's where you're like with the downtown events and stuff. It's been a really fun transition to kind of see, because when I was like 21, 22, the only thing that there really was to do in Martinez was to, you know, kind of get wasted and then go home.
Right.
And it's nice because, you know, like, which I mean, we can kind of cover that maybe later, but you know, like with our hours, that's kind of like part of the reason that we set our hours to close at 10 in the first place, is because we wanted to avoid that.
Hmm.
No one's tasting beer at 1 o'clock in the morning. They're chugging beer. So
exactly. Yeah. That's, you know, at the bar that we usually have these shows in, not my spare bedroom. I think that, you know, part of the Hop Grenade closes, that's part of the reason they close at like 10 or midnight or something like that, is because mm-hmm. nothing good happens with alcohol after that moment in time. So you can avoid it. Sure. You might make a little money or get a little more customers in or whatever, but usually that's not going to end well.
Well, I mean, you know, and that's, I mean, you mentioned money, but, you know, and like no one gets into a business purely because of love. I mean, obviously like there is the incentive that you want to make some kind of a money with it,
yeah,
or some kind of a living with it.
Sure.
But it's one of those things that, you know, there's too much that goes into it to just be like totally focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like if you focus too much on the financial, then you're going to lose sight of the product. And like, that's the whole thing. I mean, like in the name craft beer, like, mm-hmm. it's because you're crafting something and it's something you should be proud of. And like, that's what's fun about it. It's like, there's so many different variations.
Yeah.
And, you know, people doing weird stuff. Like, a few years ago I had an avocado double IPA, which was delicious. I didn't think it tasted even the tiniest bit like avocado, but it was delicious. And, you know, people doing fun stuff like that is kind of what makes the whole thing worth it, you know? Wow. Keeps you energized and passionate about stuff like that.
So. Yeah, I don't know, man. Avocado double IPA is sort of, it's very California.
Oh, yeah. Well, the beer came out of Southern California, so it kind of makes sense.
There
so,
you go. I mean,
it's about as stereotypical as you can get.
Yeah, so. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Let's talk about your homebrewing for a second, man, because, you know, we're a lot of our listeners are homebrew focused. And that's where we, you know, sort of got our start, is just talking about homebrew. How long had you been homebrewing before you decided to open a brewery?
Okay, so we started homebrewing, and we've been trying to talk and, like, look at, like, we basically tried to use Facebook as our timekeeper. I believe we first started homebrewing when I was about 22, 23. I'm 34 now. So we were homebrewing probably about 8 years, 8 or 9 years.
Okay.
Whenever we, you know, kind of started getting this thing going. And that actually started almost by accident. Mike, one of my business partners, his brother got him a Mr. Beer kit, which we basically made a really, really shitty Coors Light wannabe.
Yeah.
Sorry to badmouth the big guys. But it was just it was not a good beer, but we had fun with it, you know, cause like you got to, you know, they give you some things, you boil it, you make about a gallon of beer that's barely drinkable, but we kind of enjoyed it. So then, you know, we used an old turkey fryer pot from one of my buddy's parents, and we got that. We started boiling, you know, 6-7 gallon batches on a stove. And I don't know if you've ever boiled 6 gallons of water on a kitchen stove. It takes forever. And so that just kind of evolved, I guess. It just went from brewing on the stove, and then it was, you know, and we're still just doing the kits, and then kept getting better. We kind of upgraded our equipment, moved outside, got a propane burner, and then we decided to do our first all grain batch.
There you
go. And that was yet another nightmare, because we're used to just heating up water and then pouring stuff in and then being done, and now we have to actually, you know,
do stuff.
Bake the whole thing.
Yeah. Know? You got to do shit, man.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to actually work.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how that works, you know?
You know,
all of a sudden it's not fun anymore.
No.
But all of us are kind of like science geeks. And so it just kind of lit that fire where, like, it's a little bit of biology, it's a little bit of chemistry, and then also it kind of mixes in a little bit of cooking, and like, because you have to follow a recipe.
Yeah.
And so then once we did that, well, then we realized, like, oh shit, like now we can make our own recipes. And so that really is what kind of opens the game up, in my opinion. Like, I feel like if you're a home brewer and you're just doing other people's recipes, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I just feel like you're doing yourself a disservice,
mm-hmm.
because you should try to do something that you just don't know. Wing it. You know, like I have no idea how it's going to taste if I put pine cones in my beer. It might taste like shit. It might be the best fucking thing you've ever had in your life. And so that's kind of what we would do. We would, I mean, we'd, I think, obviously nothing that crazy with pine cones, but just, we just started experimenting more. And then, you know, like that excitement when you don't know how your beer is going to come out.
Yep.
And then you finally taste it and then you're like, holy crap, this is like the worst thing I've ever tasted in my life, but it's still drinkable. So I'm going to drink it because I'm 23 and I can't afford beer.
Right. And I spent and $30 on this. I have to drink it. You have to.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Forced to.
Well, I mean, and then that was actually another driving force for kind of why we got into it. I mean, you know, when you're going to college and you know, the whole starving college kid, and you can spend $30 or $40 and have 5 or 6 gallons of beer. That's, that's a deal that you can't pass up.
No.
So,
are you kidding me? Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, unless you want to drink, okay, we're not going to badmouth anybody, but unless you want to drink like the most garbage of garbage alcohols, you can't have a night like that. So, no. So we just kind of kept evolving, you know, and just kind of getting better and better. And so, you know, a couple of the guys went down to San Luis Obispo to go to school.
Okay.
And then, you know, we would kind of like discuss recipes and whatnot, then whenever they graduated, and then we just kind of, the whole thing, if somebody read an article, then you would pass that article along, or, oh, hey, I heard about this. And then, you know, we started looking into like water chemistry. And then we started looking about, oh man, like if you actually control the temperature of your fermentation, you can get more consistent beers, you can get better tasting beers, you can avoid off flavors, which was like mind blowing.
I love that.
And obviously I'm sure you're sitting to yourself that like, well, no shit.
Right. Knowing that now. Yeah. You're like, well, yeah, no shit. But I agree with you. Back then, it's sort of, and I'm laughing because of the way you phrase it. We're like, did you know that if you control the temperature of your fermentation, you can, it's like, that is sort of one of the bigger, you know, leaps that everyone says, if you want to improve your beer, you know, get a wort chiller and then control your temperature of your fermentation.
And that's, because people come in here now and then they ask me questions like I'm some kind of a friggin' professional. And it's like, I'm not a professional. Like, well, I'm a giant child. I'm a giant bearded child.
Yeah.
Who just likes to have fun. I just have really expensive toys to play with. And like, that's the only difference. But like they ask questions about like how they're going to improve their beer. And I always ask, like the first question is always like, what's your fermentation situation? And usually there's like, oh, you know, it's like I just throw it in a closet. And it's like, well, then you've probably noticed that you brew your best beers in mid-spring and mid-fall, because that's when the temperatures are most moderate, and that's how we figured it out. So I always tell them, if you control your variables, your product will be more consistent, and it's just go buy a cheap fridge, get a thermal probe, and just stick it in there, and then there you go. That's the way to go, really. We just kind of kept going, and then a turning point for us was we started bringing our home brew to parties. And then it wasn't just us saying that, oh, hey, like this isn't that bad. It was actually other people kind of giving honest feedback. And a drunk person is the most honest person ever.
Sure.
So, excuse me. So once we kind of had that, we're like, all right, not bad. And then we started doing like the homebrew the homebrew tents through Doe's at some of the local home beer festivals.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it still got, it got some good comments and whatnot, good feedback. And then the really big one was we entered a homebrew contest, and then we actually won the contest. We won it with our amber. I don't believe I sent you one of those.
No.
I think we were low on the cans.
Okay. All right.
But that one actually won. We obviously developed the recipe a little bit further, but that was the one that we actually won the amber competition with. And that's when we started kind of thinking like, oh, shit, you know, like it's not just a hobby of morons. It's actually something that like maybe we have a knack for this. And so that's when Dennis had the bright idea to maybe start setting money aside for an actual brewery, which I never thought was going to happen. I thought it was just going to peter off, but then here we are.
Yeah. So. And then here you are. Yeah. I mean, drunk people are the most honest. They're also the most flattering too. And so that is very dangerous place to be in, but I feel like you did it right. You know, where you listened to people, you got, feedback from them, and then you entered in competitions to see if they were actually right, or if they were just going, man, I really love your beer. Let me have more of it. It's, you know, free homebrew, which is people get into. So I think you did it right.
Well, no, I mean, and you make a really good point that like, well, free beer is always good beer.
Yeah.
But then like our goal was really to try to see like, you know, are we actually good? And that's why our mom is telling us to go on American Idol, or are we, or like, is this something? Yeah. I mean, like, it just like, it's exactly what you were saying, you know, where like, you know, are these drunk people saying it's good because they want more, or is it actually good?
Yeah.
And that was a problem that we kind of had, because when we were getting into recipe development, we would brew a batch, and then we would fill up a bunch of 22-ounce bombers and then just kind of pass them out to people. and be like, hey, give us your feedback. And then the feedback would come back and be like, good.
Yep.
Like, it's like, good doesn't tell me anything. Like, is there anything off about it? Is there anything that could be improved about it? And so trying to get useful feedback. I mean, obviously, like, once you get to a point where it's like, okay, it's good, well, then we want to know why it's good and then how we can make it better. And that's, yeah. I mean, that's always the struggle is like, how can you improve upon the product you already have?
Right, right. So you're saving up money. You open on this place. You land in Martinez, and from what I gather before, you didn't have any construction background. You didn't know anything. You're just literally looking on the internet, and then applying that in building out the brewery.
No, like real like formal construction background. I mean, I come from a blue collar family, so in high school I did a lot of construction type work, a lot of roofing. One of my uncles owns a cabinet making business. So he redoes kitchens and such. And so like, that's how I'd make my side money. Nice. In high school. And then in college, you know, I mean, just worked in a warehouse, but, most of us, I mean, like we have like experience working with our hands. So, you know, we're not just, complete morons
right.
going about this.
No, they're not mutually exclusive. You can be a moron and be good with a nail gun, you know?
This is true. This is true.
Yeah.
I would not give a moron a nail gun. No. I highly run. So like all of us kind of have like a little kind of like brought something different to the table. So my family is a bunch of carpenters and roofers. And so like
yeah.
that kind of aided. And like that's not to mean that I can build a house. I by no means can build a house. Please don't call me and ask me you know, construction questions or anything like that. But just like the simple know-how of it. And then like Sean for the job he was working before, did a lot of electrical work. And so through that, he had connections to help us with the electrical. And so none of us were actual, well, I mean, like two of us are certified engineers, but none of us were actually like, you know, like a carpenter or a contractor. But that was one of the ways that we were able to open without a huge dent in the pocketbook was because yeah. we did so much of the work ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend you guys go to the website. Which is fivesonsbring.com. Check out the blog, man. It's really cool. There's very much a homegrown feel. Most of the blog posts start with like, well, today we learned a lot about this thing. It's like framing or electrical or whatever. And I don't know. I like it. It's very much not. I don't know. It reads like a home brewer's blog. It doesn't read like a marketing paper. You know what I mean? It's very grassroots, I guess you can call it, or well, a blue collar. You know?
No, it's and like
I like it.
I think grassroots and blue collar get a bad rap sometimes. I mean, like not so much that they're a bad thing, but just that like they're overused because like I mean that's what we wanted. Like, and for anybody who is watching and is then going to go look at the blog, I forget which way he worded it.
With a B.
But where I'm currently sitting is actually where the fermentation room was. So if you go, I believe it's about a quarter of the way through, we actually built a fermentation room. We didn't have, so when we opened, we didn't have glycol jacketed fermenters like we have now, the big, beautiful ones.
Yeah.
We literally would fill one barrel Spiedels and then put them on like casters and then wheel them into our temperature controlled room that we had built and then insulated. And then we basically, we were in preparation for the new 10 barrel system that we bought last year. We demolished the fermentation room and then added on to our walk-in fridge, used that as our temporary fermentation room, and then now obviously we ferment in place. But for anybody who's looking at me, these are four of our ferment. Well, it's our four, two of our four fermenters behind me. But this is actually at one time was a closed off room.
Yeah, I saw the photos on that. It looked really cool. And what size was your brewery when you opened? What did you open?
So we opened with a one barrel brew house.
Damn.
Yeah, and that was another thing that we made ourselves. I say we Dennis did. So we had a one barrel electric setup.
Mm-hmm.
It was Blickman, I believe. So we got one barrel Blickman pots, and the nice thing about those is that they have extensions that come with them.
Okay.
Okay.
And so we basically had, I mean, just like your typical three pots. So you know, you had your hot liquor tank, your mash tun, and then your boil kettle. And then we had pumps on the bottom, and then we would run everything. And then to maintain mash temperature, we would run a Herm's coil through it. So we used a one barrel system for probably the first 4 months, and then realized really, really quickly that it just wasn't going to work. Who knew that you couldn't keep, you know, 10 beers on tap with a one barrel system?
Yeah, one barrel isn't sustainable. You can't grow.
It really isn't. Yeah. Our whole thing was very, very much labor intensive.
Yeah.
Very, very hands on. When we opened, so up until very recently, there had been no employees, no investors, no construction. It's just been us. So I'll say that. So then whenever we would brew, so we brew, you know, one batch gives us two kegs. It's just not sustainable. So then we got the extension. So now we can do four kegs per batch. And so then we were running with that, for almost 2 years. Our original plan was to try to go 5 years with the original system, and then upgrade to the bigger system. But demand just kind of got out of hand. We were able to upgrade a little bit sooner.
That's
obviously
great.
Bad timing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we used our Blickman one barrel system, and the way that we made that work. So we all worked our Monday through Friday jobs. Mike and I were the ones who worked in town. So on Tuesdays and Thursdays for the first 2 years. So basically, well, actually probably not for the first three, because it's before we opened. Basically every Tuesday and Thursday, Mike and I would be down here after work brewing batches of beer. And then we would brew every Saturday morning and Sunday morning. And so, the amount of hours that we spent here, I'm kind of glad I don't know, because, I don't think it would bode well for my mental health, to know that I wasted or spent that much time here.
Yeah, man. No.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, and that was actually how we kind of transitioned. Because originally, we had four, you know, brewers, yeah. Myself and Mike, and then also Dennis and Nick, two of my other partners. But as Mike and I did more and more of the brewing, it didn't make sense because, you know, they didn't know what the brewing schedule was, what we needed, and then ordering grain and stuff like that. So it was a very kind of gradual transition, to where Mike and I became just the two brewers. And then obviously now, him and I are the only two full-time, business partners, and then, obviously head brewers, cause we're the only ones who do it.
Right. You know what's going on. Jess, let me take a break real fast, man. And, I want to come back. I want to talk a little bit more about, you're getting into the business. I want to talk about the business now in COVID, how you guys are dealing with that. And then more importantly, I want to drink some of your beer. Hang on, everybody. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing is directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Segmented, demented, fermented. It's The Session.
All right, thanks for hanging on, everybody. It's The Session. We're here with Jess from Five Sons Brewing in Martinez, California. And I just wanted to point out that the tagline on your website says, beer that shines. And I'm not really a tagline guy, but I really liked that. Like, I actually smiled when I read that, and I felt like a total dork for doing it. But I really think that's a lovely tagline. I think it's great.
That kind of, I believe that Dennis kind of came up with that. We kind of wanted a tagline. I don't know if every brewery has one. I know a lot of them do.
Yeah. I can't think of one.
We kind of wanted to come up with something at least, that maybe, you know, stood out about us. And we figured that, like, beer that shines, obviously it does have a little bit of a tie to the name, Five Sons, right. Sun Shining. But also, like, before we move on to go towards like the current stuff, whenever we started, like, our goal, obviously, whenever you're home brewing, you just want to get better.
Yeah.
And I knew that whenever we opened up our doors, that, like, I knew we weren't going to have the best beer, but I just wanted to make sure that, like, I wanted our beer to be good. And so, like, it doesn't have to be the best beer, but it has to be good. It has to be consistent. It has to be cold. It has to be fresh.
Right.
And I feel that, like, as you kind of work on a craft, like, it's something that you can be proud of, and like, and it's something that like it creates a warm spot in your mind. I don't know if I'm going too far with this, but
you're doing great.
It's a product that like that kind of stands out. Oh, thank you, buddy.
Just lean it. Just lean into the analogies, man. Don't worry.
No, it's I don't know. It's kind of like something like whenever you cultivate something, and all of a sudden like you get to see someone enjoy it. That like it shines. It doesn't just shine for you. It shines for me, because whenever someone comes in and they try something and they really enjoy it, it's not just like yay. It's no. It's like it means a lot to me because I took the time to make something and to take samples of it and to test it along the way. And then now here I have somebody coming in and they're actually willing not only to walk into my establishment, but to give me money so that way they can spend their evening drinking my product. And so like, so the whole beer that shines thing, it definitely has two meanings. Whether Dennis intended that or not, I have no idea. but also, whenever everyone thinks of a beer, most people don't think of a stout or a porter. You think of something light, golden. And so then you can just go as literal as you want, where like when you hold up like a nice blonde ale in the sunlight, it is a beer that shines. And that's kind of what we want. We want our product to shine. That's just the goal.
Yeah, for sure, man. Absolutely. When you were homebrewing, someone asked in the chat what your favorite recipe was to brew.
Specific recipe?
I don't know. Style, whatever.
Obviously I sent to you, that was kind of where my goof up came. So I'll drink just about anything, not to sound like a booze hound, but well, there you go. My personal favorites, I like Baltic porters, robust porters.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Something smoked. And then also I'm a really, really big hop head. So for me, I've always enjoyed, IPAs. I think that they're a little bit simplistic. In that there's a lot to hide behind, because if there's any issues in your process, you can kind of hide behind the hops.
Yeah.
But definitely, because that's when I was kind of getting into like the hoppier beers. So for me, like favorite beer to brew as a home brewer was definitely IPA. I actually helped my friend's dad brew his first batch of home brew about 3 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks ago.
Nice.
So bringing another person into the fray.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
But no, yeah. For me, anything hoppy.
Anything
Yankee,
okay.
Piney, West Coast is my favorite. So that's something that always gets me excited.
Yeah. Are you still working off of home brews on your commercial recipes, or is there a definite gap between those two?
How do you mean? Do you mean are they recipes that we brewed when we were homebrewing?
Yeah, because and the only reason I asked that is because there's a surprising amount of former homebrewers who are now commercial brewers who don't use their homebrew recipes. And I just always like asking that because it's interesting to me.
Well, the one that is definitely, we definitely tweaked it along the way.
Yeah.
What is our Ernst Amber. And so that was the one that we won a homebrew competition with. It didn't need a ton of tweaking. It's just a really, really nice, it's a light-bodied amber ale. It's got a lot of like kind of caramely, roasty flavors that come through. I always tell people when they come in, it's a really nice middle of the road, because it's not going to overwhelm you. It's not going to underwhelm you. If you want something, you know, bigger than a blonde but less than an IPA, that's kind of the way to go.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of them, I mean, like they were all – relatively based on homebrews. Like we never kind of drew like a line in the sand to say that we would not use a homebrew. I mean, I wouldn't be against it if one of my buddies was to say like, oh, hey, I dug up, you know, this old vanilla porter that we made, you know, in 2014 or whatever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be against using it. But that kind of brings in, you know, to one thing that I was thinking about today when I was talking to my buddy, and how I mentioned it earlier, how like one of the things that kind of gets you really going in homebrewing is that like you're super excited about a new recipe, or maybe you're trying something different. Maybe you oscillated your temperature, or you're changing the yeast you're using, or using a different hop blend, and then you're kind of excited for how it's going to come out. And like we've been kind of forced to lose that this past year because with COVID, we haven't really been able to experiment a lot. Whenever we purchased our new system, it got delivered January 15th of last year, I believe.
Ooh.
And then I left my big boy job at the courts January 24th, And then I went back to school to attend the Master Brewer Certification course. So shout out to the 2020 class of that.
Nice.
If anybody actually ends up listening to that, or to this rather.
Congrats, dude. That's cool.
No, yeah, it was a lot of fun. But then, of course, you know, COVID kind of kicked everyone in the teeth. And it's just been kind of a damper. So most of the brewing that we've been doing for about the past like 8-9 months has mostly just been kind of maintenance brewing for distribution and stuff like that.
Okay.
Obviously going forward, like the goal is to get back to that experimentation.
Yeah, for sure.
But sorry to go in a gigantic circle. we do use some of our homebrew recipes that we basically just kind of modified.
It's a jumping off point for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is exactly what we did. For anybody who's ever tried to scale up a recipe, God bless you, because it's kind of a nightmare and it's scary. But that's exactly the same. I mean, like, that's basically what we did whenever we had the big system here. We basically took recipes we already had with flavor profiles that we were kind of proud of.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of scaled them up. And then once we had them, we're like, okay, this is how it comes out. And then, you know, you do like your minor tweaking with mostly it's just with hop character and body
sure.
and whatnot.
Yeah, you got to dial in the system. And I thinking about it now, I wonder if it's because as homebrewers, we sort of like throw caution to the wind and experiment on stuff. Like, we're really trying to brew beers that we like to drink. But I think when you have a business like you do, it's not necessarily that cut and dry anymore. You have to make sure that the general public likes what you're making too. So you sort of maybe leave the super experimental beers behind and go, okay, well, how do I make this amber ale or this Kolsch or whatever more appropriate to the general public rather than what, you know, weird stuff I like to drink? I don't know. There's maybe some psychological reason to leave the home brewing behind and focus on the commercial, but...
Well, I feel like the best way to go, though, is to keep the home brewer in mind. So, so we have a couple of beers that that I almost never drink. For instance, our Frenchie's Cream Ale, which is named after what this building used to be. When I was in high school, there was an adult bookstore, which occupied the exact same residence that we currently reside in with our brewery.
Oh my god!
The name
so
of that
good.
Place was Frenchie's, and so of course we had to pay homage to that. So we made an East Coast style cream ale. And called it Frenchie's.
Do you sell it in like a black plastic bag?
People, I feel like you should, or you know, what I mean, like, I don't know, put like a XXX on it or something like that.
Something, man.
No, unfortunately, nothing that fun. We try to be tame with our marketing.
Yeah,
a lot of us have like dark senses of humor, so we don't want to scare any prospective customers away. So
no, don't chase the normies away, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But no, but that's one, you know, that like I don't drink a whole lot. I don't think it's a bad beer. It's nothing I have against it. It's just one of those that it's based on like, I mean, all the beers we make are ales.
Mm-hmm.
They're just easier to make.
Yeah.
Yeast is a lot more forgiving. But with that one, I just don't feel like there's a whole lot going on with that one. But I make it because people are going to come in that want a lager or a pilsner, and that's the closest equivalent that I can make. And we've all been resistant to hazy IPAs.
Yeah, here we go. Yes, thank you.
And it's a lot of it has been personal, but then also we get so many people coming in and asking for hazy IPAs that it really doesn't matter what my preference is. It matters what you want to drink or what somebody else wants to drink. Personally, I don't think that you can get any better than a nice piney West Coast IPA. That's the best beer. I think that is the pinnacle. You're not going to get any better. Stop making other stuff. But at the same time, everyone has a different palate. I can't stand Belgians. I think they're disgusting.
You know, I want to talk to you about that too, because that is strange to me. As a home brewer, I feel like Belgians are, the Belgian style beers are sort of like you have to brew them. You have to go down that road, and it's sort of like the gateway to these other flavor profiles, especially when you're dealing with yeast and fermentation temperature. And they're sort of like the classic way that you explore fermentation temperature and the differences between them. But that's not your thing, like at all. Sort of surprising.
Some of the other guys, they like them. I personally can't stand like the yeast forward. I don't know. I always call it like the back of the tongue flavor, but it's something with the aftertaste that I'm not a big fan of sours, but I can drink them. They upset my stomach, but I can drink them. I can't get through a Belgian. A Belgian is probably the only one that I would rather be sober than drink.
See, and I'm that way with hazy IPAs or double IPAs or anything like that. Like that's not, I'd rather not do it.
I mean, I'll drink a hazy. I won't be happy about it. But no, I mean, then there was a time when like I would drink similar beers, excuse me. Because I mean, you figure like a Hefeweizen, which is kind of like the bastard cousin of a Belgian.
Yeah.
Similar, I would say in flavor profiles as far as like the yeast character goes.
Mm-hmm.
I used to drink those when I was like 21, 22, when I was first kind of getting into craft beer because I wasn't yet mature enough or adult enough to handle a big full body imperial stout or maybe something more a little bit more hop character.
Yeah.
Kind of like you were saying, like, you know, it's not about your palate.
Right.
It's what the people want to drink. So for anybody listening and getting all excited, there are two bits of information that I can release. One we've already released previously, about a year and a half ago, which was our Downtown Bramble, which was a kettle sour infused with blackberry that was extremely popular. We are going to be bringing that one back. So if anybody wants to start clamoring, we are going to have that one coming.
Nice.
And we are indeed in the construction phase of a hazy IPA. So
you have to, brother. Like, you know, you can't get down on it because if people are coming in and asking for it and then they leave, you're just leaving money on the table and you need money to survive. You need it.
And also, too, I mean, you know, that's not what we're about, you know, like,
yeah, but unfortunately you have bills to pay. I mean, you know, that's like just like what you're saying, right? It's and I'm not like you're like a breadhead, right? Where like, all I think about is money for my Tesla. It's like you have bills to pay. And if people are coming to look for a product that you don't make, well, then you should make that so they can come and hang out.
Well, then you're an idiot for not making it. I mean, that's right. Kind of the thing is that like, yeah. You know, like, granted, we have plenty of people who are interested in our other products, but we get enough people coming in asking for hazy IPAs, but also
you
too, like,
do it.
Not just for them, but also for ourselves. I mean, like, yeah. I feel like you shouldn't be one dimensional in your brewing. You shouldn't just brew sours. You should brew a little bit of other stuff. Maybe if your specialty is sours, that can be fine, but you should also brew some other stuff, not just for the customer, but also for yourself. I mean, just to keep your, you know, skills tight, I guess you could say. But
someone in the chat saying that you should release a Belgian hazy double IPA.
Oh, that person doesn't want to know what I think about that.
Yeah, sorry, Thomas.
Sorry, Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I opened your blonde ale, your Valkyrie. Can you tell me a little bit about this beer, please? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a nice. Okay, I believe you can obviously refer to the can. I know for a fact it uses. Well, I shouldn't say I know for a fact. I believe it uses Magnum hops. I brewed the dadgum thing.
Magnum and Cascade.
Thank you. That one, it's a really nice, like, summer beer, I always say. I do drink that one from time to time. I do tend to like a little bit more body and flavor in the beers I drink. If I'm going to sacrifice calories for my waistline, I'm gonna damn sure enjoy the damn thing.
All right.
But the blonde one, really, really good summer beer. It's light, it's crisp. It's not supposed to be overpowering.
No.
It's not my favorite one that we brew.
Sure.
But at the same time, and just refresh my memory, which ones I give you? I give you the Valkyrie, I believe, the Relief, Forester, and the Porter.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Right. Yeah.
All right. Just making sure I'm not completely losing it.
No, man, not almost. I like this beer, man. I really do. The Munich really comes through. So, number one, I appreciate the information that you give on the cans. You give the hops, the malt, the yeast, and the IBUs. And that can sort of give you a little bit of a hint about what to expect from, you know, from a beer like this. So, you know, the pale malt and the Munich really shines. What's the percentage of Munich in here? I would guess it's over 20%, but that's me not knowing anything about anything.
No, I'm trying to think on that one.
Because it's very punchy with Munich. It's very like that bready, biscuity, toasty kind of thing, which I always like in blonde ales. Because you have that lighter, lighter base malt with this just sort of like toasty thing coming through, and then the clean hops. I think that's a great way to make a blonde ale.
You know, people with good palates have always amazed me, because I don't have a good palate. I have a really good edge for beer. I can tell you if a beer is good, and I can find off flavors for you. But one thing that I've never been able to do is to like drink. A wine and then tell you that there's hints of blueberry and chocolate and whatnot. I can never get those in there. I can get like the most basic ones. I believe with that one, it is a pretty high percentage. I would say probably closer to 30%. I would have to double check our notes. Oh, actually, give me 2 seconds and I can tell you.
Yeah, this is good, man. If I didn't have the other beers to drink, I would drink this entire can. It's very good. I do like it a lot.
Oh, I was way. Oh, I'm actually really surprised you're pulling that. So let's see, figure. It's under 15. It's probably about maybe about 12%.
Okay. Well, I was wrong. I said 20, but again, I'm stupid. So
hey,
I like that flavor, man. It's good.
Well, that's also the thing. I mean, like, if you're a fan of the flavor, then obviously you're gonna draw more of that out. In the certification program I took for the Master Brewers, we had an entire section on sensory, and I was terrible with that one because I don't have like a deep diverse palate.
You're stuck drinking IPAs, dude.
I know. I've just burned myself out. I've just kind of ruined myself over the years.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, man. You have nothing left to give. You take a break for a month and let your taste buds reset.
Well, yeah, I mean, and then like nothing that we do. We're not doing anything too crazy. I mean, obviously, you know, we'll like kind of touch up mash temperatures, and stuff like that. The one thing for the cream ale, which I didn't give you, but I'll still tell you about it. Yeah. We do an extra long boil because that one's made with corn and rice. And so to kind of eliminate like that popcorn flavor, we do a 2-hour boil, which is everyone's favorite beer to brew because it takes an extra hour at least. None of our processes. That was one thing that I did mention in my notes was that a lot of our beers, like they're relatively simple. And that's not to say that like they're simple tasting. It's just that we're not trying to go nuts. I'm not trying to make, you know, a barbecue bacon maple triple IPA, with maple syrup. We're not trying to go too insane with it.
No.
I feel that like, you know, we use a balance of ingredients and then just a good process as far as like mash temperature, water in, water out, yeast pitching, and then just like keeping an eye on our, basically not letting it sit too long in the fermenter before we keg and can it. And I feel that just kind of brings a product to where like it just shouldn't be overpowering. I feel like whatever you add to it, it should be balanced, which is why like when people start adding adjuncts to their beer, like if you add coffee to your stout, it should be a stout with coffee, not the other way around.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's where like, you know, I'm a big fan of our blonde. I'm actually very proud of that one because you can't hide behind anything in a blonde. If you goof up, you know, if your temperature gets up and you've got some off flavors coming through in your fermentation in a stout or a porter, it's going to be covered up by all that chocolate and all that roast, all that black malt. Or in an IPA, you can dump in extra hops to kind of cover up the aroma of that. But in a blonde, there's nothing to hide behind. You're kind of stuck with what it is. And I forget where I read it, but I read an article that said that the true test of a brewery is to go and try their lightest beers, and then that's how you'll know their process.
Sure.
Because that way you know that their entire process is sanitary, it's clean, and everything. Whether or not that holds true, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the field, you can test that pretty easily, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like there's a resurgence of blonde ales, just like there's a resurgence of lagers going on. You know, I feel like 5 years ago, maybe or so, you couldn't really find a blonde ale. But now I think a lot more people are brewing them because I think people are sort of burnt out on these high adjunct pastry stouts and all this kind of nonsense that people are doing. You know, we sort of, the pendulum is swinging back into just give me a basic clean beer that's not over the top that I can just sit and enjoy. I mean, it's the reason Coors Light is popular. It's the reason Budweiser is popular because it's a clean beer. It doesn't really taste like anything, but people just want to enjoy a nice beer, but then they go to craft beer for like some, you know, some flavor. But, you know, I'd like to think with the high adjunct beers, we're sort of like settled into a pace in the industry where we're not inundated with them, but they're still there. You can find them if you want them.
You know, I mean, like, and that's exactly right. Because like a few years ago, we went to a bar in San Francisco for my birthday and, they had, I don't know, 60 something taps. And I think about 50 of them were IPAs. Ugh. And even me being a complete and total hophead, I kind of had to like, you know, put a finger up and it's like, no, like that's too much because you need a balance. And like, there really has been like a resurgence of like not just blondes but just lighter beers, blondes, Kolsches, pilsners, which is great because you can still get a great flavor profile in there, and then you're not burning your palate out, you know, by drinking a bunch of hops. But also that's what's being driven by the market, and that's what's great about the market is that, you know, like it's going to be a cycle. Obviously, like IPAs have have reigned supreme. I don't see him going anywhere, but I think that like the whole thing, like you said, pastry stouts, the milkshake IPA. Thank God that was a, thank God that was a short lived. I'm going to call it a fuck up, not a fad.
Yeah, for sure, man. Even the Brute IPA, I know it was born in San Francisco, but it's like, that was, I was talking about on the last show we did with New Spring, Dave, formerly Flat Tail. And it was like, we solved the puzzle of the Brute IPA. Everyone was like, oh, that's how you do it. Okay. And then it wasn't interesting anymore. But there is sort of a chase in craft, I think, to figure out how to do this new innovative thing, like hazy IPAs. When those came out, they weren't, in my opinion, they weren't very good. They weren't done well. People sort of figured out, they solved the Rubik's Cube of now people can generally make a decent tasting hazy IPA. Hopefully people will relax a little bit more on that instead of, you know, just really trying to drive. Cause now we understand the style.
Well, it's also, I mean, like, you know, whenever you find like the thing that you like, you know, I like IPAs. So I know that like, and IPAs, I'm sorry to say, like, they're fairly easy to make.
Yeah, of course. You know,
because, and the reason for that is that like hops are delicious and it's like you really can't go wrong with it. But even I will say as a hop head that like, well, there's too many in the market. Like right now we have, so we have 10, so we have 12 taps total, 10 are occupied right now, and four of them are hop forward beers, mm-hmm. which I think is too much. I think it should be three at most. And you have two of them that are up there. So, but it's also like what drives the market. I mean, obviously like the double IPA is not so much, but like a pale ale and an IPA, it's almost invariably going to be your number one seller. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of pale ale, is it Realize?
Oh, I was going to give you the benefit of the doubt and let you try it. It is Release.
Release. Okay. I figured it. Release pale ale. What's first of all, what's in the name?
As I okay, so all the names, we try to either have a connection to the name of our brewery, Martinez, or one of us. So the Valkyrie was for me. I'm Scandinavian, so I wanted I wanted something with that. So I went with the Valkyrie Blonde. The Release is named after Release Valley Road, which is like a main thoroughfare. So if you drive, it's like kind of like the outskirts of Martinez. It's a really long road that basically takes you from Martinez to Lafayette. So okay. This one I know for sure is made with Citra and Mosaic, like most pale ales.
Yeah.
That one is going to be, so in comparison to the Forester, which, you know, that's our two biggest sellers, that one's going to definitely have more on the aroma, a lot more floral, citrusy notes on it. It's still pretty bitter and full-bodied. We kind of goofed up with that one, but we enjoyed the goof up. We refer to it as our extra pale because it's a little bit too IPA to be pale, a little bit too pale to be IPA.
Yeah, so. I mean, and it's a 6.8% pale. I mean, I love pale ales, but to me, that's an IPA. That's a like a mid-90s West Coast IPA where it's like you got a little crystal malt in there, but it still has some IBUs, but it's way more hop flavor than I would get out of an IPA. So I see what you're saying. You're sort of like riding the middle of the line where you got the IPA alcohol and then everything else is sort of pale ale.
Yeah, and like that's kind of the thing, you know. So basically the reason that we decided to make it or to market it as a pale instead of the IPA was because of the IBUs.
Yeah.
And the fact that that there's so much more flavor of hop versus bittering hop.
Yeah, you got a great hop flavor in this. It's very very classic, it's very subdued. It's great. It tastes great. It really does.
That's one of my go-to ones here. Currently, I'm drinking the Taste of Summer, which you can only get in-house. We don't have cans. We're not distributing that one.
Okay.
So, and now that we can actually dine outdoors, I'm going to give ourselves a little bit more of a plug.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to talk to you about outdoor dining and all that kind of stuff. So we'll definitely get there.
I don't know how long we have here. I mean, I don't want to ramble on too long, but
I'll take another break in about 5 minutes or so. And then we'll come back. We'll try the other two beers, and then we'll probably be done in, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour.
Oh, no rush on my part. I've got my business partner up there doing all the work, so I'm just back here having a good time. So.
That's right. Yeah, I like the pale, man. I like the pale. For me, it's like I said, it's the alcohol is a little too high, but for the people who like that sort of thing, this is to me classic, like late 90s West Coast IPA, just toned down, like 15-20%. It's very good. I do really like it.
And then I have a question for you. So we say the alcohol is too much. Do you mean how it comes across in the beer? Like, is it too boozy in the beer? Or is it more in just in the back of your head knowing that it's 6.8?
I'm a big pussy. So I don't drink a whole lot of high alcohol beers. So that's mainly what I'm saying. But there's a little heat like on the sides of the tongue, a little bit. But I wouldn't, I still wouldn't, if, what am I trying to say? If I didn't mind like the alcohol, I would overlook that. I wouldn't be focused on it. But I do get very focused on ABV. I sort of get stuck on that. It's like my thing. And I don't necessarily like it about my beer drinking self, because I want instantly everything under 5.5%. That's where I want to live, because I like drinking a lot of beer. I just don't like getting really drunk. And that's my problem. And I sort of project that on every beer that I drink. So I don't think that anybody would have a problem. Any reasonable beer drinker would have a problem with the alcohol, the way it comes across, the presentation of the beer. I think it's very good.
Well, because I kind of do the same thing. So I went through a really big phase where all I wanted to drink was session IPAs.
Yeah.
Because you get all that hop flavor, all that hop aroma, but only, like you were saying, 4.5-5%. Because I'm kind of the same way, that like sometimes I get a little bit annoyed. Like, I want to drink 10 bourbon barrel aged stouts, but you can't.
You can't. No.
Well, excuse me. You can, but your wife's going to get real fucking pissed at you.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's kind of a thing for us. You know, like a couple of our beers do get a little bit up there. For instance, our Singularity, our double IPA.
Mm-hmm.
That one's like, it's a really good cross between a super malty IPA and a super hoppy IPA, because it is bitter, but there's also a lot of that residual unfermented sugar that kind of just blends together. So it kind of cuts that, but it's 9.5%.
Jeez.
And so I don't drink that one anymore because I got drunk behind the bar and acted like an ass. So I was drinking goblets of it, right?
Okay.
I was just knocking them back. And the next thing you know, I'm absolutely wasted. And I was like, this isn't good.
No.
I'm acting silly. It's not professional. Okay. So then like the next weekend, I was like, all right, I still want to drink it because it's good. So I was drinking our little 4-ounce tasters. Well, if you drink 30 4-ounce tasters, it's not much of a difference than if you just drink. I just stay away from it. It's like my nightcap usually. So I had to learn the hard way with that one.
Yeah, look, we all do, man. Sometimes it's behind the bar. Sometimes it's in front of the bar.
Unfortunately for me, it's mostly behind the bar because that's where I spend the entirety of my life these days. So
yeah, for sure, man. No, I like this, man. What kind of crystal malt do you have in here? It says just the malt is pale crystal.
Crystal malt, we use William Crisp 60L.
Oh, 60L. Damn. Okay. Yeah. 60. Yeah. For sure.
We've done a couple where we used 30, and then there was one where we did 15.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember what that was. And the only reason I actually know that is because we were going through some old bins. And we had like maybe like 4 pounds of it that we just ended up tossing because it was so long ago we can't remember what we used it for.
Yeah, smart.
Most of the stuff we use is 60.
Okay.
It's a nice dark malt, great aroma, great color. And then obviously, and then we used to use a 2-row pale malt for all of our backbone for just about everything. Obviously, for our OG Burst, which I did not give you, maybe I should have, would have balanced out the pack a little bit better. That one we use rolled wheat, rolled white wheat.
Okay.
Nothing too crazy. I mean, like, again, like, you know, just kind of like basics. You know, we want to have like a nice balanced beer, good flavor.
Yeah.
And then that way I feel like it comes across. My mom always used to say that like the difference between good food and grapefruit in great food is who made it. And that's only because you can taste the love in it. And so like, I feel like that does kind of come across because it's part of the presentation. If you know that it's coming from somebody who put their effort into it, it comes through, in my opinion, personally.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, you can tell that people take time with certain things, certain aspects of brewing. You know, like if you're trying to make a lager and you rush it, that mm-hmm. comes through. And you're like, oh, this person doesn't really care. That kind of
stuff. I mean, it's a lot harder whenever, you know, like you're drinking something out of a can, but like if you go over to someone's house and they make you breakfast, that breakfast is going to taste so much better than if you went out to a restaurant purely because you know what went into it. Just like if you come into our place under normal circumstances, if you come in and tell me that you're, I mean, like obviously like pre-mask, pre-COVID, if you came in like, oh, hey, it's my first time here. Like, I'll, but, oh, like get a beer, like, and like walk you through that. But then I'll ask you if you want to check out the facility. Mm-hmm. And then I'll walk you through and I'll show you our brew system, whether it was the small one or the big one. And I'll show you our fermentation room. And this is where we keep our cans. And then I'll kind of give you like a brief history, because that way you, you get the whole experience.
Right.
It's not just the beer, it's the whole thing.
Yeah. So, well, that's cool, man. I think that's nice. And you're, I don't say embracing your community, because it sounds like you weren't at one point, but you, you do sound like you have a very doors open policy when it comes to like giving people, you know, tours. Usually I've never really heard of like, hey, this is your first time, let me ask you if you want to come on a tour. And I think that's really cool, because you're inviting people behind the curtain to see how everything is made, especially in their backyard. And I think that gets people jazzed about it and sort of ties them emotionally to your place.
I remember, you know, whenever I was, you know, huddling around like a little propane burner in the backyard, and I got to go to a big boy brewery.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Anchor Steam and I got to go see their 127 barrel brew system. And then, you know, and then they got to walk you up and down all the levels and their fermentation. And then like, and I was like a little kid.
Yeah.
And so I was going to think about that. And I'm like, well, it's always fun to see something bigger than what you have. And so, you know, if anybody asks questions, that's like, you know, I've had people DM us on Instagram and ask questions about fermentation. And again, like, nice. I'm not a professional, but at the same time, like, if I can help you not shoot.
Don't give me that shit. You get paid for what you do. You're a professional. That's it. You're a professional. You're not an expert, maybe, but you're
okay,
a professional.
There we go. All right. Yeah. Okay. I'm not an expert.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, if I can help you not shoot yourself in the foot the same way that I shot myself in the foot, like, I'm more than happy to do it. And also, I kind of, for if any of my friends listen this far, sometimes I can be a little bit of a grumpy bastard with my temper. So
same.
I try to like balance that out by being nice to the people.
Super nice. So. Yeah, for sure. All right, Jess, let me take one last break. We're going to come back. We're going to taste some beers, talk about COVID, because it's the elephant in the room, so to speak. And, you know, we'll be done. So hang on, everybody. It's The Session. We're here with Jess from Five Sons Brewing in lovely downtown Martinez, California. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
You're tuned into The Session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, thanks everybody for sticking around. We're still here with Jess from Five Sons Brewing. I'm about to pop his India Pale Ale, the Forester, and he's about to tell me a little bit about this beer. Take it away, Jess.
Okay, so that one is going to be, that's our traditional West Coast IPA. Our goal was to kind of go as close to, you know, the definition of it as possible.
Yeah.
That one I do not remember the hops off the top of my head.
Warrior, Centennial, and Cascade. And man, I poured it. I have the glass about 2 feet from me. That Centennial popped me right in the nose, man. That's great.
It's wow. A big beer. It's 7%. The grain bill is fairly similar to the release. Obviously a bit more, just because it's going to be higher in alcohol, bigger body. But that one is a lot more, definitely higher on the bittering hops. So we had a lot more at the beginning of the boil to kind of get that bitterness to come through.
Yeah.
And obviously the dry hop isn't quite as extreme, just because we're not as concerned with the aroma. Definitely concerned with it because it's an IPA. That's one of my go-tos. That's what I was drinking for my first beer. My second one is the one that's only available here. But yeah, the Forester, the name comes from, so if you go down to the marina, which is maybe 100 yards, well, the start of the marina is about 100 yards away.
Yeah.
But it's the big waterfront in Martinez. If you go back 100 years, it was like the main port for the Bay Area. Well, actually, if you go back far enough, it was before San Francisco.
Oh, geez.
It was one of the main ports. And so actually one of the other beers you try is the Granger, which is named after Granger Wharf. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. But the Forester, so it was a big shipping vessel for I'm not really sure exactly what it was used for. However, it did catch fire in the bay and then burn and sank. And now when the tide goes out, you can actually see the skeleton of the ship still out there. And the name of that was the Forester.
No shit. That's so cool. Wow.
I shit you not, sir. If I'm lying, I'm crying. I ain't shed a tear.
Yeah.
So that's another one, you know, that we kind of tied to the community a little bit. Again, just a big, bold hop flavor. I feel that IPA should be lighter in body unless you're going for like a double or a triple. And that's when you get the unfermented sugars. So I feel like, which is why I don't like malty IPAs. I don't like the syrupy texture to them. I feel that they should be light, crisp, quench your thirst, and then just kind of like hit you in the teeth and the back of the tongue with a lot of that bitterness.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there was a time when IPAs were like, it's just pale malt, that's it. You know, but you have the crystal malt in there, and that does bring it back to that West Coast, you know, skewed West Coast. Because if you don't have any of that body character, it's sort of just like a really alcoholic session IPA, where it doesn't really do anything.
And that's the thing, you know, like I mean, we made a hoppy blonde on accident one time, because we dry hopped the wrong fermenter. But that's kind of like exactly what it is. Like a blonde is pretty much, you know, it's mostly two row and then a little bit of Munich, and then you add a little bit of hops. And so like we wanted to make sure that you get like that good golden color, which mm-hmm. is why we add the crystal, of course, but then also it adds a little bit more body, a little bit more roast to it. So then it balances out that hop profile.
Yeah.
It's not super high in alcohol, 7. So it definitely makes you think twice about it if you're going to drink 6 of them. but at the same time, you can still have 4 of them. And then, you know, call an Uber.
Oh, fuck. I couldn't do that. That can't be me. I'm such a lightweight. I guess I'm like cured in, you know, I really should have been born in England, just drinking ESBs my entire life and sitting in a corner complaining about the Tories or whatever.
The Highlanders waiting for them to come down.
Yeah. This is very good, man. This is classic West Coast, man. And I think it's mainly your hop flavoring additions. Can you tell me how you layer the hops, what your additions are, and like the timing? You know, you don't need to get super detailed, but like are you a Whirlpool only guy, or is this a 90 or whatever?
So most of our beers are a 60-minute boil. The only time that we boil a little bit longer, one time that we boil our wort any longer is if we need to adjust for sugar concentration, which is pretty rare at this point. We're kind of dialed in on most of our beers. As far as once the hop additions start, aside from the once hop additions start, pretty much everything is 60-minute.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind maybe trying to experiment in the future with doing like a 90-minute boil or something like that. I know that I believe it was Dogfish Head had a 90-minute IPA.
Yeah.
I know that there's other breweries that they use a 90-minute boil for their hops, at least for their bittering additions. We just do a pretty standard, I believe it's 60, 45. I mean, like pretty much every 15 minutes we're dumping in hops. And then obviously we dump in a big push at the end just to kind of give more of the flavoring hops, because we don't want it to be all bitterness. 60-minute boil, and then we just kind of layer the hops through there, obviously like gradually increasing the amount of hops so that way the kind of like the bitterness gradually comes through. Mm-hmm. And then the dry hopping, we dry hop it 5 days. Obviously pull the yeast off and then give it the diacetyl to rest and then carb it and then get it ready to go. I mean, that's a big thing for us. Like, I would love nothing more than in the future to really start doing some wacky, crazy things where maybe, you know, we're trying different things. But for right now, I think we have a pretty decent product. I think we have a really good product.
There you go.
I'm trying to be more, you know, forthcoming.
Be more just a little more confident. That's all. I mean, your beers are tasting great. I think, you know, if you're trying to hit that West Coast vibe with these hoppy beers, and you're doing it.
Yeah, maybe I should try to be more cocky like I am in my personal life. I just don't want to come on here and be a pompous asshole. So,
well, if you do, then I can't be. So, you know, I appreciate that.
I think we have a pretty solid product. I don't think we're going to, you know, change the world tomorrow. But at the same time, like, I think that what we're doing is good. It's consistent. You know, people like it. I like it. And that's kind of my thing. And I've dumped batches before. So it's like, yeah. I mean, I'm not above doing it. Thank God I haven't to do anything with the big guys, but, you know, but if something goes awry as far as like fermentation temperature or, you know, I mean, like if there's an off flavor, like there's no point in selling it if someone's not going to like it because right. it looks bad on you and it looks bad on everybody else. And no one wants to drink shit beer.
So. Yeah, exactly. So let's go back here real fast because you got your 10 barrel brew house in late January. March 14th, I think, was like the lockdown.
March 16th.
March 16th. Okay.
I remember that day distinctly.
Okay. Okay.
Although fact checkers out there want to like prove me wrong. So, I didn't know what he's fucking talking about.
I think I have March 14th stuck in my head because I think that's the day Disneyland closed. I don't know. I just read that the other day.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. So how do you pivot? How do you handle that?
So the first thing we did was start crying and then throw our hats in the air and whatnot. No, it's I mean, you just, like you said, you have to pivot. Obviously, you know, we probably took, you know, I mean, we took a second and we're like, oh shit, like this sucks. You know, I had just quit my job. I was commuting up to Davis to go to school. Me and Mike are the only ones that the brewery was actually paying for at the time. And originally when we bought the brew house, our goal was to really start focusing on distribution. So we were going to start getting kegs out there just as quick as we could. And then we were going to get our canning line up and running. We had purchased Goose Island? Goose?
Wild Goose, I think is what it
Wild
is.
Wild Goose, yeah. Thank you. Not, Goose Island's beer. we purchased a Wild Goose dual head filler canning machine. We just hadn't got it dialed in or worked on it. So we were figuring, okay, we'll get our kegs going and then we'll work on this thing. Well, COVID kind of turned that on its head. So luckily we already had that.
Nice.
And that just, so originally what we did was we just ordered a bunch of blank cans and we were doing 16-ounce crowler fills. We just wheeled that thing up to the front and we would fill off the tap and then just cap them and then give them to people. That's how we were going at first. And then, yeah, and then we just got our – that's when we had to kind of really light the burners to get our labels designed. And then obviously go through that whole thing with, like, the SKUs and everything to get them ready for distribution. But because of that, we were able to start distributing to liquor stores, grocery stores. And, like, granted, our current distribution network isn't huge – but building a distribution network in the middle of a pandemic is I mean, I can't even make a joke about it. It's daunting because nobody wants to take a gamble in the middle of a crisis. So I mean, it's been really, really hard, of course. But the biggest thing is like you said, pivot. You know, they said we couldn't be open, so it's like, all right, we're doing growlers to go, and then we got our canning machine going, and then they let us open up, and then okay, so we're gonna pivot, and now we got to do that for the summer. And then it started getting cold, so we had to pivot and get pop-up shades and heaters and then pivot again because they closed us down. And
God,
I mean, the only other opportunity, I mean, the only alternative would be to just kind of quit.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. So, you know, I worked too hard to get this place to what it is to let it not be my decision to close. And that's kind of been the hardest thing because I have other friends who are business owners, not in the same industry, but just that, like, you know, they're debating closing the doors, and I don't think that's fair that you're in a position where your business is going good, and then because of something that you didn't plan for, you know, it's not like you made a bad business decision. It's
right.
And that's been the hardest thing. You know, like our business was going great. You know, we were doing better than expected. We were ahead of schedule, and then to suddenly be looking at, like, you know, I mean, we didn't debate closing per se, but it was just one of those things that, like, in the back of our minds, it's like, if this keeps going, it's like, you know, that's what you're going to be faced with. And there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they have had to close doors, and it's like, it's heartbreaking because it's not fair.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to do about it.
No, not at all, man. Well, I was looking on your website. So you have like food trucks and stuff too. Is that new for the pandemic, or were you doing that originally?
No. So the food trucks thing, yes, let's brighten it up. We're getting a little down there.
Hey,
no, the food trucks we started doing, I believe, probably around like the 6-month mark after we opened, maybe a little bit less.
Okay.
We started doing one food truck a month.
Yeah.
And that was just to kind of feature outside food. And our goal was always to do food that wasn't offered in Martinez. So, you know, we've had, I'll give plugs. Cousins Maine Lobster has been out here several times. Opie's Kitchen, they do like burgers and fries and such. You know, we've had, you know, Hawaiian barbecue truck. We've had one food truck that they do everything from pancakes to jalapeno poppers and then everything in between. And so we try to kind of mix it up. And our goal was always, I mean, like recently with the pandemic, we've been kind of, you know, just getting anybody we could. Obviously, you know, like there's food requirements with the current tier that we're in right now. So we kind of have to, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah.
So we use that. We also have what's called our neighborhood kitchen, where we paired with a couple local eateries to run food over to us. And we did that from day one.
Nice.
That wasn't a new thing. That was just to kind of help because people like to eat when they drink.
Yeah.
But as far as the food trucks go, we're pretty much offering residents to anybody who wants to come out and pop up for a few hours. And originally that was more to just kind of give like a pop, you know, for us and Martinez. But now it's more of necessity. So we're pretty much booked up through, I believe, March. I'm good. Thank you.
That's great, man. And so that we just opened, and for those of you who don't know, Newsom just allowed everybody to go back into outdoor dining. So are you guys open now for doing that? Is that part of the food trucks?
No, yeah. So yeah. So what we were doing originally was we were kind of booking up the food trucks.
Yeah.
And then they locked everybody down. So then, you know, we had some food trucks, you know, a couple of them canceled and whatnot. But we basically, during the lockdown, when all we could do was to-go sales, we basically offered up our driveway right out in front. And we told them, it's like, you know, we can't guarantee you sales. I can't guarantee you money, but I can guarantee you a place to park. So if you want to promote your business, we're going to be open, you know, these days from these times doing to-go only. People can't hang out, but it'll at least give you, like, if you need a place to park, you're welcome to park out in front of our place. And so we had a bunch of people that, like, I mean, granted, the money wasn't great, of course, but it's still, you know, something's better than nothing on that one. And that was just our way of, like, these people have helped us, you know, for the last 3 years by showing up, selling great food, and then boosting our business. So the least I can do is give them a driveway to park in.
Yeah, for sure.
And then currently, yeah, we are open. We have a little bit of outdoor stuff. You know, I mean, great timing, you know, with them saying, yeah, go ahead. I mean, we had, you know, what, two or three great weekends of awesome weather.
Yeah.
And then now it's just, well, it's not raining right now, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, we had that atmospheric river, man. We had, like, out in at Mount Diablo, had, like, 80-mile-an-hour winds.
It's
insane.
I mean, it was, you know, what was it, like, 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago when, I mean, like, I went over to my mom's house and I came home and it was great weather. And then 40 minutes later, it sounds like there's a hurricane outside my house and the house is shaking and the window panes are vibrating. And
yeah.
So I mean, like, as far as timing goes, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. You know, we need the business and thank God, you know, we've got a handful of people out there that are brave enough, dumb enough, whatever, to come in and drink the beer, and sit outside in the cold, which is awesome. You know, we have heaters set up, which is the best you can do in the circumstances.
Yeah, I feel like that's the best compliment, too, is when it's freezing ass cold outside and people are still showing up, turning out to drink beers. Because they wouldn't, I mean, like, probably normally. I mean, I'm guessing. I don't know. I wouldn't do it.
I mean,
I'm fragile.
Oh, I would definitely be out there. I'm a moron, stubborn. Nice.
Yeah.
And I can't stand to stay at home. So, but no, I mean, the biggest thing, you know, like, obviously, you know, we have to maintain the social distancing and wearing the mask and all that stuff, which is obviously still a pain in the ass. But, you know, we're going to do it. But like you said, it's like, you know, people making that effort. And kind of like I mentioned earlier, you know, like the whole, like, community support thing. When I look outside and, like, and it's 50 degrees or 48 degrees and I still have people sitting outside, it's nice. It's a nice little compliment pat on the back.
Yeah, so. It's got to feel good, man. It's got to feel good. All right, well, I just cracked your porter, the Granger.
Arguably one of my favorite ones. My buddy actually came back here and asked if I needed a beer, and I said no, and now I want a porter. So it's kind of funny that you're cracking that one now. So that one, so that's our latest batch. That one is about as fresh as you can get. Believe it's maybe 2 weeks old, if that.
Wow.
And that one we actually tweaked a little bit. The first, obviously, dark beers, they don't go quite as fast as the other ones. So that one... We were able to tweak that one a little bit on the second batch. I was really happy with how it came out as far as The roasty notes coming across. There's the black patent, the chocolate malt obviously coming through. I forget the hops we use, but hops usually aren't the biggest game player.
Warrior and EKG.
That's one of my go-tos. I love porters in general, and I'm really, really proud of that one. So that one is it's the Granger Porter, named after the Granger Wharf, which was the main intake area whenever Martinez was a port city. And would do a lot of trade and such. That's a good one. 6.5%, really, really well balanced, medium body, which, you know, for a porter, like, I mean, it's not overly heavy. It's one you can have a few of them. It's not going to knock you completely on your ass. that's one of my favorite ones. That's one that I'm really, really proud of. I think we kind of hit the nail on the head with that one. So
it's very good. It has a very creamy mouthfeel. You know, which porter should have a little bit. It shouldn't be astringent like a stout or whatever. It's that borderline, which I think you guys hit really well. It is sort of, there's some porters that are reminiscent of like a chocolate milk. They got that creamy mouth feel with that slight hint of like a milk chocolate thing. And that's what I get out of this. Do you know the percentages of your chocolate malts? And
I know that stuff? They're, I mean, like, obviously they're there. Yeah. I can look it up for you just so I can give you an actual answer.
Sure. Maybe it'll help some of the home brewers listening.
Because God forbid I actually know my beers.
Yeah. I just put the grain in. I don't know, man. I'm just.
Oh, that's actually lower than I thought. Okay. So you figured. It's about 5% on the chocolate and slightly less than that for the black patent.
Wow. Yeah, that's less than I would have thought too, but because it comes through really well. Yeah.
Let me see. Maybe we're breaking ground as far as our efficiency with our brew house. Yeah, maybe we're just that good.
Yeah.
Because there's also, you know, like, I mean, there's Munich in there. I don't believe there's any crystal. Shouldn't be.
It says crystal on the can.
There is. I lied.
Wow. See, here we go. Maybe
that's where some of that like roasty maltiness comes from.
Well, you need the crystal in there for the body. I mean, you can't. I don't think you can have a porter without it.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a. I mean, it's a good beer. It's also one of those, you know, that like unfortunately we don't get to brew it that often, so it makes it harder to kind of tweak renditions. That's one thing that we've really been doing as far as. I mean, obviously, we've always been like, you know, good at like taking notes. And that's one thing for any home brewers listening, be as meticulous as possible with your notes. And like, if you take a pH reading and it's, you know, and it's off by 0.01, like make sure you notate that. And just to be aware of it, because if anything ever goes wrong in a brew, you always want to be able to go back and try to comb through what the difference was. What was the variable? And that's what we started doing, to where if there's a fraction of a difference, if there's a difference of a fraction of a degree in temperature, we make sure we notate. We don't just round up. We make sure that like that degree is notated. You know, if our transfer time is different, if our, obviously the winter time is the best time to cold crack or to do your knockout, because the groundwater is so cold. The water savings are just night and day different. But we also make note of that, the fact that like, you know, the hops are sitting at a higher temperature for a longer time.
Yeah.
For whatever it may be.
It's a solid beer, man. I like it. Yeah.
I do like that one a lot. Obviously, I drink it more in the wintertime. Dark beers tend to be more wintertime beers, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Was it?
I said, sure, yeah. I agree.
Oh, I thought you were mocking me.
No, man, not at all. I would never do that. I would never do that live on the internet. I would never do that to you. I mean,
you would never do that in person unless you're a lot bigger than me. Then I probably
Well, I'm 7'9", so you know.
Oh, you look it. I could tell. That must be a giant microphone.
I'm huge. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's good, man. I like it. I like it. It's like I said, it's creamy. It's got that chocolate thing going through. It's good stuff. I can see why this is one of your go tos. What is your flagship, you would say? What's your most popular beer?
So the most popular beer. Obviously, it kind of goes back and forth between the Forester and the Release.
Okay,
I think that has to do with two things. Yes, I do think that they're good beers. I'm proud of them, but also I feel that your hop forward beers are always going to be towards the top.
Yeah,
And then after that, Valkyrie's another big one, and then our OG Burst, which is an orange guava wheat ale. So we basically just we basically just brewed a nice, you know, medium bodied wheat ale. And then we add a guava puree and then orange extract to it.
Damn. That sounds pretty good, man.
We just kind of started that. So we basically wrote the wheat recipe and then we started experimenting with different purees. That was when we were on the smaller system. And so, you know, we did like a tangerine one, we did a raspberry one, did a blackberry one. And we decided we were going to do guava, but guava is a pretty overpowering flavor.
Yeah.
So we wanted to kind of cut it with some citrus. So we got some citrus extract and then blended it that way. And that one was like ridiculous with the amount of people that like were demanding it, or excuse me, drinking it. And then once we ran out of it, the way that they were demanding it. So we're like, oh shit. So we brewed that one again and it just, I mean, sold like wildfire again.
Nice.
And now it went from being kind of a one-off experiment to it's a regular mainstay. It's in stores. We have cans of it. It's my personal favorite can because it's like hot pink. It's our loudest can. Ooh, that was one thing I wanted to touch on.
Yeah. What's up?
We're talking to my buddy. When you're talking about like things in the industry that you don't like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. From our questionnaire. Yeah.
I can't stand when you look at a can and it takes you 15 minutes to figure out what kind of beer it is.
Yes, dude. Yes. Yes.
And that was kind of one of the things that we did with the design of our cans. When you look at the blonde, you know it's a blonde. Yeah. It's a yellow can. You're going to assume. Same with the Forester and whatnot. And also.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. And then you got the pale ale and the IPA. They're like a darker version of the green. I didn't actually put that together. But
and
I
then
get
you
it.
Have the porter, and then the porter, which is brown, and then the Zenith, which is actually black. Well, you don't have the Zenith with you, but the Zenith can is black, and then goes to like a gray gradient. Try to kind of have that come through, and then also we state very very clearly on there because. And I hope that some brewers listen to this, or some breweries listen to this, just because like it's all about marketing and like. If you have a hazy IPA, that's fine, but an IPA is not a hazy IPA and vice versa. So that's kind of one of my biggest qualms with the industry right now is that I've gone to restaurants before where I purchased four packs and like, oh, I'm getting an IPA thinking that I'm getting a regular IPA and then it turns out it's a hazy. And it's not that I'm against hazies, it's that I didn't want it at the time. So that's a big one for us is that we want to make sure that whatever our product is, it says real clear, real quick, right at the bottom.
Yeah, well, and you know, when the hazy thing really started to hit, and at the Hop Grenade, we would get them on tap, and I would go to the bar and I would order a beer, and it was at that time where like hazies had been around for a little bit, but then they started to bleed over into pale ales and all this kind of shit, but it wasn't noted anywhere on the board. So we actually like, you know, I bitched about it on the air, and then Justin talked to the staff, and it's like, yeah, we should really be noting down what things are for the same reason. Like, you know, yeah, it's a free beer, but I'm taking the time to drink this beer. I want to drink this beer. I want a pale ale. I don't want a hazy pale ale. First of all, those three words should never be put into the same sentence. And I haven't actually seen one in a long time. So that's good. I feel like everyone's sort of like coming to their senses now by this hazy thing, but give the customer a clear piece of information. I like that you have your logo, the name, and then the fucking style, and then the alcohol. That's the other thing that bothers me. And now I'm gonna just ride on your train for a second. Give me the information. I am very much the alcohol guy. I will pick a beer based on the alcohol level. That's just who I am. I don't know. So I want all the information. I don't want to get a 7.5-8% beer when I'm expecting something less. You know, if I want to choose that beer, I want to choose that beer.
Expectation is just as much a part of sensory as flavor, aroma, mouthfeel, all those things. Because what you're going, like, that's why marketing is such a big deal, is because what you're thinking going into it will affect how you're going to perceive the flavor. If you're expecting something rich and roasty and it comes out sweet and salt, I mean, like, if it's,
or watery or whatever. Yeah.
But if it's not what you're expecting, it's going to kind of ruin the experience. The experience should be like, I'm getting a hazy IPA. Cool. Now I'm ready for hazy IPA. I'm going to experience it. I'm not going to not order it. But if I order the damn thing, I want to damn sure know that it is what I'm what I'm ordering.
That's all I want.
I get real persnickety with these things. So.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely a word, man. All right. Well, look, Jess, I've taken up a lot of your night. I think I'll let you go. I think we're done.
That is fine. As long as
wrap it up.
Well, hopefully I haven't wasted too much of your time.
No, you did great, man. Everything was great.
I will take the time. I want to say anybody who is listening, watching, tuning in on live, thank you so much. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity.
Of course. Thank you, man.
Whenever everything clears up and you want to do a round two in studio, I'd be more than happy to come in and do it.
Absolutely.
And for anybody listening, come on in. Our brewery right now is such a mess with storage, and basically everything that's normally up front is currently back here so we can be open.
Yeah.
But I'd be more than happy to show you the mess. Come in, say hi, have a beer.
Hell yeah. That's true. FiveSunsBrewing.com, I believe, is the website. Yeah, FiveSunsBrewing, S-U-N-S. And if you're in the greater Bay Area, if I'm reading this right, you guys do delivery.
Yes.
How is that going? I think it's a great idea. You don't deliver out here. You cut off at Bay Point. I'm out in Oakley, so
So we're trying to limit it to what we can kind of get done. We are going to be adjusting our delivery times. Currently, if you order today before 11 p.m., we will deliver tomorrow to your house between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., usually closer to 10 just because there hasn't been a ton of orders. We're going to try to adjust that time. A lot of people work during that time.
Yeah.
It's a $5 delivery fee if you just want a four pack, or if you order $74 or one case or more, it's free delivery.
Damn.
So if you and your friends want to get in on it, go ties on something, we're more than happy to bring it to you. We just need somebody with a valid California ID stating you're over 21 for your first delivery. After that, I'll leave it on your doorstep. I don't care.
Yeah. So if you're in the Bay Area, man, if you're like down Moraga up over to Clayton, Hercules, Pinole, obviously Martinez and, Bay Point around that area, you're set, man. Order some beer, get it delivered. Don't go anywhere unless you're going to go to the patio. You can do that too.
Come to the patio. It's cold outside. We have heaters and we're going to have food trucks this weekend. Oh, here we go. Another plug. Cousins Maine Lobster will be here tomorrow from 12 to 7, 12 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Nice.
And then we have Tequaches Tacos on Saturday from, 12 to 7 again, I believe.
Damn. Sounds good.
Yeah, Jess, come on, have some food, have some beers.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Jess, thanks, man. I appreciate it. FiveSunsBrewing.com. Check them out. Thank you, everybody, like Jess said, for tuning in live. We really appreciate it. If you want more beer radio, of course, we just released, I believe it was a Brew Strong with Jamil and John Palmer talking about homebrewing tips of all things. I believe we're going to do a live Dr. Homebrew on Sunday, the rare Sunday Dr. Homebrew. So we're going to be drinking some homebrews and judging that and breaking them down and, giving some homebrew tips out there. But stay tuned for the Brewing Network's, schedule and all that kind of stuff. You guys will get all that when you get notifications about, hey, we're about to go live or, whatever. I don't know. Things are weird here at the Brewing Network. Things are weird here all over, but we're still trying. We're struggling along. So until next time, you guys, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Wear a mask. Stay away from everybody. But go support your local breweries because everyone needs some help right now. So thanks a lot, guys, and we'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.